Joining us on the line from Israel, Rolene Marks. Rolene, good morning. How are you?
Well, Boker Tov, Habibi, or I should say Chababim, because there's more of you in the studio.
Okay, wait. Explain that to us. So it's one Habibi, many, not Habibis.
Not Habibis, Chababim.
Chababim. Oh, gosh. Somebody write that down. Because we're going to forget. Oh, I'm going to forget that. The minute, Rolene.
And that's not your lesson in Hebrew for the morning. That's actually your lesson in Arabic.
Oh, is it
Don't
Arabic?
Ask me what else I know, because you can't say it on the air.
Isn't it funny? The first thing we learn in any foreign language is to swear. It's, I don't know. It's a funny thing. You know, that's why school gets it so wrong.
But rest.
If they just started teaching the swear words, everybody would learn the language.
No. Mm. Why am I saying yes?
Exactly. No. But rest assured, I can also say in the garden. But there we go.
Okay, good. All right. So an amazing turn of events yesterday. It did take a long time. But finally, Jeremy Corbyn being removed, suspended from the Labour Party. Give us a bit of context here.
Well, first of all, I just want to dedicate a song to Jeremy Corbyn, because I know, Howard, that you will play it. And it's sorry seems to be the hardest word. It seems that even after yesterday's whole brouhaha, Jezza can't apologize. So let's break it down. Yesterday, the EHRC, which is the Equality and Human Rights Commission in the UK, released their report after their investigation into allegations of anti-Semitism and how it was handled by the Labour Party. And the report is quite damning. I've actually got a copy of the report, and it's not an easy one to read, but I think for the Jewish community, the Jewish members of the Labour Party, all of those who faced the most unbelievable harassment and discrimination, this was a day of vindication. So basically what the EHRC has found is that the Labour Party under Jeremy Corbyn committed three grievances. They broke the equality law, and they practiced unlawful harassment and discrimination. And if you've read some of the reports coming in from people who filed complaint after complaint, it's absolutely, truly horrific. The most vile cases of anti-Semitism. And they found very interestingly, and you and I speak about it so often, Howard, how you can draw the line between something that is posted on social media or something that's reported in the press, often inaccurately, and some kind of abuse or act of violence. They also found the Labour Party guilty of not doing enough to investigate this. And one of the concerns was that any time somebody put a grievance forward, it was kind of scuppered or swept under the carpet, and there was the internal kind of political maneuverings. And they didn't make any recommendations to get rid of Jeremy. What they did say was that the Labour Party now has to earn the trust of the Jewish community, put in these mechanisms. And quite interestingly, they said, you know, when it comes to sexual misconduct, there are all the mechanisms in place for reporting, investigating, and meeting out some kind of punishment. But when it came to anti-Semitism, this wasn't treated with the same dignity and respect. And no sooner had the report been released than, of course, Jeremy took to social media, to his Facebook page, and released his statement, which basically said, you know, it was blown out of proportion. He said, and I kind of love this. He said, one anti-Semite is one anti-Semite too many. Well, I guess they decided maybe you, Jeremy, was one anti-Semite too many, just saying. But he went on to blame his political opponents, both externally and internally, for blowing it out of proportion. And the new Labour Party chairman, Sir Keir Starmer, I had to practice a lot, guys, to learn how to say Keir. He apologized to the Jewish community for the pain and grief and what he called a day of shame for the Labour Party, and promptly suspended Jeremy Corbyn from the party and as whip of parliament.
So just to be clear, he was censured for this, as was the Labour Party in general, and Jeremy Corbyn comes out and says, although anti-Semitism is not cool, in other words, we can't have any anti-Semitism, it was still blown out of proportion. by political opponents. In
other basically,
words,
yes.
So why would he have the need to do that? What would he gain from that? Like, what is wrong with the guy?
$1 million question.
I just don't understand it.
Why
not stand up and say, you know what, the Labour Party did have a problem and, you know, hopefully now we can deal with it and move forward. It's all he had to say. But then to now start talking about it being about political expediency, like it's almost self-destructive, really.
Well, absolutely. You know, he can't say those two small little words that would really mean a lot to the community, and that is, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for any hurt, any pain, any suffering anybody's been through. I mean, you know, when you read the accounts, the personal accounts of Labour Party members, Jewish Labour Party members, and any sympathisers who endured this, it is absolutely staggering. And of course, the Jewish community released their joint statement saying, you know, they didn't want this war, they didn't want this fight, but they're proud that they showed up, they're proud that they did it, and you know, they're relieved that Jeremy Corbyn has been suspended. What I find absolutely outrageous is that instead of this being a moment of reckoning, a moment of awakening, because we are so conscious in 2020 of divisions and intolerance and, you know, not being sensitive to the other, the amount of hatred unleashed on social media was staggering. Absolutely staggering. Mm-hmm. The democratic socialist, you know, we stand with Jeremy, and, you know, he's fighting racism and discrimination. I mean, does the fight against racism and discrimination not include anti-Semitism? I'm just asking this question.
It's just so remarkable, and let's just hope that, because the Labour Party was always a home for many Jews in Britain. And, but over the last couple of years, they've been completely and systematically removed from and distanced from the Labour.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, when they say what a difference a year makes, if we go back to this time last year, we were just pre the UK elections, and there was a real sense of fear amongst the Jews of Britain that if Jeremy Corbyn was elected Prime Minister, they would have to leave the country. And the Labour Party payoff line, which was for the many, not the few, was changed by many to say for the many, not the Jew. And this is a traditionally a liberal party that has always fought racism and inequality. There have been some infamous standoffs throughout its history in the UK of standing together against racism, against fascists, and it descended into an absolute den of iniquity. And now we fast forward to a year where Jeremy Corbyn is suspended in disgrace from the Labour Party pending an investigation. So I'm going to be following this investigation. It's going to be quite fascinating to see what comes out of investigating Jeremy Corbyn and his particular misconduct.
Absolutely, and it'll be fascinating to see. Another amazing story is that the largest NGO of imams worldwide has adopted the universal definition of anti-Semitism. This is an amazing story.
Something absolutely extraordinary is happening, and, you know, not just the normalization in the Middle East, which who'd have thunk it a couple of months ago, guys, but if we look at the trajectory that is happening over the last couple of weeks, Albania, the first Muslim majority country to sign IHRA, the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition of anti-Semitism. And just this past week, there's been a convention of Balkan countries, including Serbia, Montenegro, Albania, Croatia, looking at ways to fight anti-Semitism and to, you know, to build their tiny Jewish communities. I've been to Montenegro. There's a teeny tiny Jewish community that's starting its rebirth. It's very beautiful to see. With the signing of the Abraham Accords, Bahrain has signed a memorandum of agreement with the United States to fight anti-Semitism, and they have adopted IHRA, becoming the first Arab nation to adopt the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism. A couple of weeks ago, Saudi Arabia issuing the ordinance that hatred or hate speech or intolerance of Jews and Christians will no longer be allowed in mosques and in schools, which goes a long way to undoing been decades of this kind of indoctrination. And then the incredible, incredible news coming in yesterday that the largest NGO of imams in the world, the Global Imams Council, has adopted the IRA definition of anti-Semitism. These are 1,000 imams from all Islamic denominations and schools of thought. And this is the first major, major group of imams, major religious faction within the Muslim world to do this, which is truly, truly remarkable. And yesterday, very heartwarming to see Muslims against anti-Semitism in the UK coming out and saying we stand with our Jewish brothers and sisters. So we're definitely seeing a change happening. And I'm hoping it gains momentum and vice versa between Jews and the Muslim world.
Absolutely. Absolutely fantastic. It is really just unbelievable, unbelievable to see. And no matter what anybody thinks of Donald Trump, I'm absolutely convinced that this move and this trend towards peace in the Middle East is something that he started and he pushed, and his strength to deal with this in the way that he did is part of the reason that these moves have been made. What are your thoughts?
Well, I totally agree with you. I think whether you like him or loathe him, and remember, a broken clock is always right at least twice a day. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't forget that his first major international tours as president was to Israel and then to Saudi, to the Arab world. And yes, he also went to Rome. He made it very, very clear, you know, his position on religious tolerance. And, you know, he is a disruptor. He is a very different personality than what we have seen in office in the United States. And, you know, we're just days away from the election, and it's going to be a fascinating couple of days. I think I'm going to be very grateful when it's over, because I find the partisanship just, you know, astounding.
Terrible.
But, what he has accomplished here, and he has said there are 10 other countries that are poised to normalize with Israel. That will probably happen after the elections. And I think, you know, we've all been playing what I call normalization bingo. You know, what number or what country is going to be called next? It's very, very exciting. And what we're seeing coming from the UAE, Bahrain, and now starting with the Sudan, who made their announcement over Shabbat last weekend, is this trajectory to do business with the Israelis. I mean, we can't keep up with the UAE fast enough. Just this week, you know, talks with Hadassah Hospital to maybe open a hospital in Dubai. The memorandum of understanding between the two Premier Leagues of soccer or football. All I know, Howard, is that's the round ball with the black and white, to work for cooperation in both countries. The business dealings that are happening, it's really, really remarkable. The 24 flights per week to the UAE, including, you know, Dubai and Abu Dhabi. The now 14 flights to Bahrain. So we can go, you know, catch the Grand Prix in Manama if you want to, or you can go to the magnificent shul there in Manama. So really, really an extraordinary, extraordinary change in the Middle East. And it was interesting to hear from our ambassador to the United Nations this week, Gilad Erdan, say, you know, the Security Council basically needs to wake up, because what it's focusing on is not the reality on the ground in the Middle East.
Yeah, it is really remarkable. And Ivy says, absolutely no doubt that none of this would have happened without Donald Trump. Can only pray that he will be re-elected. That is from Ivy. And Clive says, tell Rolene that Donald Trump has been more right than any of the so-called experts have been in their lifetime. Indeed. And he has to receive credit. credit in for what has gone on in the Middle East. If we look at what happened under Obama, it got worse and worse and worse. And there's something about the strength that Donald Trump went into these discussions and agreements and negotiations with that turned the Middle East and has started this process of peace. And absolutely amazing.
Well, I think John Kerry's wearing a big omelet on his face because he said absolutely no way would there be peace between Israel and any Arab country until there was peace between Israel and the Palestinians. And boy, is he wearing a scrambled egg or an omelet.
Well, that's the point, is that instead of, I spoke about this metaphor some weeks ago, is that it's like the Maginot Line during the war, where the French thought that they were safe because the Germans couldn't come through the Maginot Line. All they did was go around it. And what's happened here is exactly that. Donald Trump went around the issue between Israel and the Palestinians, started making peace in all the other countries, and what's going to follow, I believe and I hope, is peace between Israel and the Palestinians, because the Palestinians now don't have that unequivocal block of support. There are definitely others within the Arab regions looking at the Palestinians and saying, you know, you also have some responsibility in this discussion. It's not only about Israel, it is also about you. And that will bring peace faster than anything else. Well, it's 2 minutes past the hour of eight. Rolene, you've got to stop talking. This is crazy. It is absolutely unacceptable. We are late for the news. Rolene Marks, awesome chatting to you. As always, we'll catch you next week. Just have a good one. Have a Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.